You're listening to a Toad Network production, putting heroes on trial because someone has to. Tired of the discourse in writer fandom? Looking for something to put that bounce in your step and a bee in your bonnet? Then look no further than the Uncommon Cast RX, Active Ingredients, Ayla, Amit, Claire, Gomez Q, Neji Rea, Professor What, Sona, The Imposter. Side effects may include Heiseiitis, Showa Fever, Helper Robotophobia, and an English Lilt. Welcome, everybody, to this 80th episode of Uncommon Cast RX. The subject is Kamen Rider Gaim, episodes 41 through 43. There's just going to be two of us on today. We're traveling light because if we didn't, I'm afraid it would turn into 3 hours worth of us all taking turns bashing the corpse of Gaim. Although yeah. We wouldn't do that because we're not like certain people. Anyway, sorry. This is...
sorry, oh, getting too deep in this. It's already beginning. It's already beginning.
Yeah, so it's me, Amit, and Jonathan over here.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah, and
that's as
like
happy
I said,
as you'll hear me all episode.
We were just talking before we hit record, saying how much we don't like the show at this point, and why don't you go ahead and share just a snippet of what you're feeling and why, and then we'll go into things.
Like, there are just no words that can describe exactly how I feel. Like, I was watching, I mean... I've the reason we haven't done this show for a bit, probably because everyone's been busy and episodes weren't available and stuff, but I've been away, so I marathoned 42 and 43 kind of together, and that was a big mistake. I got to a certain point in the episode and I just kind of went, right, this show has lost any chance to redeem itself now. I am so done with this. I will finish it, as you said, I will finish it, because I really want to see how on earth they're going to try and end this. To be honest, like, the words a mess or an understatement, considering now how I feel about this show. There are very few words that can be used to describe the mess that this show is now. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And it's funny, you and I had spoken, I think, just casually a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago, about, oh yeah, Urobuchi has this new show, it's a mech show, and I was saying to you, oh, I might check that out. And
yeah.
I'm never going to voluntarily check out something that Gen Urobuchi's done unless I hear it's a total change of pace from everything else he's done.
Yeah.
Not only am I done with the show, but I'm...
You're
I'm
done with
much,
him.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't go that far, but I don't... Because there's things of his, like, psychopath I still do want to watch, but he's writing with somebody else, and I wonder if that might be what makes the difference. So I don't know. I can't say I'm as done with him, because I did think Madoka was pretty well done and definitely wasn't like this at the very least. It was, you know. But this, yeah, I'm done. I'm totally done with this Kamen Rider. Like, there was a time where I thought, like, at the end of the series, I might go through and watch the whole thing all over again and kind of maybe try and reappraise it as a kind of cohesive whole. But this just. There are just very few words that can be used, and hopefully people will understand what we're referring to. But as I was just saying, I've seen some people who said that episode 43 was incredible, so I just don't know anymore. I really have. Words fail, to be honest.
Okay, so before we continue totally just trashing the show and being real random and rambly, we're going to go back over some of the notes that we made and discuss stuff stretching all the way back from episode 41 to the... dramatic conclusion, I guess you could call it, a 43. Episode 41, showdown with the Overlord King. The only question I have is, what happened with Kaito's arm injury?
I'd totally forgotten that was a plot point. It's kind of explained later on, but it seems a bit random to keep bringing it up now. Although, the only thing it does make me wonder is whether they're trying to use that as an excuse for his kind of almost departure from, like, you know, any kind of normal or reasonable logical thinking pattern, because some of what he says is just completely random. Like, I don't know. It seems his character just seems really kind of inconsistent and overlooked. And it's just a kind of really, it's really disappointing in so many respects. But yeah, I totally forgot that was even a plot point until they brought it up again, which is probably not a good thing considering how much they've been driving home or had been driving home coaches, like, you know, don't eat kind of thing.
Right.
Which is, you know, considering how much that was like, majored on, it just kind of hadn't, it just hasn't even been a thing at all, and now they're bringing it back, and it's just like, oh, you just want to put it's seemingly like they're trying to do what happens at the end of Fize, where Kiba and, oh gosh, Takumi have been like kind of friends, I guess, or kind of like not rivals because they do fight each other, but they have a kind of conflict going on. And then you get kind of Kiba set up as the big villain in the final like four episodes, which is really stupid. Oh, and comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, I heard that's like, really, really random.
Yeah, it is. It's really stupid. And I wonder if they're going to do the same thing there here with Kaito, which I really don't like because that's not at all... I mean, I'll get to this later on because when, you know, stuff happens with Kaito, it kind of makes sense. But I thought the whole of Kaito's arc was all about him realizing that life was worth living. And this all seems to be like, actually, no, he's the same as he ever was. And if not, even worse, which isn't really... Yeah, anyway, that's... Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, I'm going to, you know, let the listeners in on the production of the show. If you want to jump around, feel free.
Oh, cool. Fair enough. Okay. Kaito, I just don't know what they're even wanting to do with this anymore because he's like, when they started off, it seemed that he was really like, he's gone through so much to like fight for Mai and he obviously cares about people. It's just that they don't seem to, and then he just comes out with these things where it's like, oh, well, I want the whole world to die. And you're like, well, that's stupid because you're going to lose everyone you care about. And obviously you do care about them because you've gone through so much to fight for them in the first place. You wouldn't do that just for, you know, for no reason. You risk your life in many respects. And it's just like, what are you doing? It just, I don't know. It just like, and you know, you can kind of explain it away and be like, oh, the arm injury is affecting his mind and the Helheim poison and stuff. But he seems to be in total control of himself. So I don't see how that would, you know, It doesn't like the Helheim thing isn't like a kind of insidious poison that kind of poisons you slowly. You become an Invez or you don't. Like, you know, there's kind of a big binary there. And it just seems
right,
really disappointing.
Is. But I have to disagree with you on some your defense of Kaito, because I don't think he's been truly caring about people. And he has that line later on that I only wanted to, you know, stop the overlords from exerting their power.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what to think about that, because to me, Kaito is such an has been throughout the whole series such an inconsistently and poorly structured and written character.
Oh yeah,
that
yeah.
I don't know if he's being honest or when he's lying or anything like that for the most part. Mm. And I don't. I'm not sure that Urobuchi or the creative team behind the show knows either, because I think he may just be a plot device, the most type character there can be.
Well, this is the thing. I think that's the problem, is they're jumping between tropes and they can't decide which trope they want to use. Because sometimes he's set up as like Kota's rival, and then sometimes it's like brothers in arms, and then other times it's like love interest, and you're kind of like, you just can't decide what trope this guy is. So you try and make him all of them, and then it's just, he just becomes a device for the story, as you say.
Okay, how much of Yu-Gi-Oh! Did you watch? Because I watched
everything.
I don't know. Yeah, I think I did all the original series and nothing beyond that. He is Seto Kaiba, isn't he? Like, Kaiba's a really weak character.
No, he's not, because Kaiba's consistent.
Okay, like, no, you're right.
Like, Kaiba's like, I will... Kaiba in the manga is much better, and I've read a lot of the manga, and I kind of appreciate more what they were trying to go for. And also, I've seen the Japanese version of Yu-Gi-Oh!, which makes a lot of things a lot clearer, that the English dub just screws up massively. But no, Kaiba is consistent, and eventually Kaiba kind of comes around to the idea that, you know, he becomes a better person eventually. And also he has Mokuba constantly, he cares for him. He wouldn't want the world to end as a result of, you know, his actions.
That's an excellent point, and a complaint I've raised and continue to raise is there is no Mokuba analog anywhere in this show for the most part.
No,
Mai,
I agree.
Sometimes does that, but even that's
inconsistent. Exactly. Even that's really inconsistent. And it's like, well, as you say, you need something like, Mokuba was annoying as anything, although less so that was more a dubbing thing as far as I can tell, but like, no, he's it makes a lot more sense, his role in the manga and stuff, but like, he also has a machine gun in the manga, but anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, I read some of the early manga, he's like downright evil.
Yeah, pretty much.
Some places.
Like, it's pretty much. Although Yugi reforms him, which is interesting, but anyway, we're not talking about Yu-Gi-Oh. This is how wonderful this show is. It makes us talk about other shows, but...
A problem of the show, and maybe that could be a reason that so many people like Gaim so much, is because it's kind of like the moon. It shines with the reflected glory of so many other shows that people have nostalgia for. I think that may be the case.
I do wonder if it's the case that, like, because there are some things, like, It's like, I kind of liken it to Fies in some respects. Like, the story of Fies is a complete mess, and it was a great concept and was ruined completely by majoring on the wrong things with the wrong characters. But the designs in Fies and that kind of thing are incredible, and so a lot of the fight scenes are very, very well done. And I wonder if that's what a lot of people, if people are focusing on different things and thinking that's good, but from a story point of view, it is a complete mess. And the characters are just all over the place. And it's, you know, that's the, but as you say, I do wonder if that's, because, I mean, Urobuchi has come out and said that he, you know, was inspired by, you know, other shows, and, I mean, a lot of anime is kind of self-referential in that respect, which isn't necessarily a good thing, but it's a thing, and it happens. So, you know, I wonder what, so, you know, as you say, I do wonder if that is the case, and as to why, you know, it's kind of been sort of so seemingly so well-received, and considering this showing, I don't think that's deserved. Which is quite a strong statement, but it's what I believe.
I firmly believe it too. And the troubling thing about it is, I don't know if some of the things with which I have the most issue, if those bother people or if they saw them coming. Because, you know, in my notes for 41, my last thing I say is, Maya is cool, it's too bad she is sort of being used or turned into a tool or asset. And that is realized in the most awful way in the next two episodes.
Yeah. I mean, Claire's comment when I said something like that on Twitter, her comment was something like, oh, it is becoming, haha, kind of thing. And I was like, well, yeah, there is that. You know, I can, you know, I think to some extent I've kind of ignored how she's been used because it has been so token. It's really, it's disparate. It's horrible. It really is. And I mean, this is, you know, I think this episode just pushed me over the edge in terms of, like, it's so in your face and so blatant. And
now, you know, on the concept of the way she's been used being token, why, in your mind, does that, I guess, take the sting off of how she's being used? Do you get what I'm saying or asking?
Why has it bothered me less up to now? Is that basically what you're asking? Is that basically the question? Or right?
Yes.
Like, I don't honestly know the answer to that, and I've been racking my brains trying to think of an answer to that question, that almost that exact same question, because I do think it's terrible that I haven't really kind of appreciated this up till now. But I think the fact that she just hasn't been in it an awful lot, there's been long swathes of time where she either isn't considered or only appears for like a few minutes, and I think that's probably something. But now they're kind of focusing on her as a major theme, it kind of seems to come across more. But I don't know why I haven't noticed it up to now. It just kind of, I don't know. I think now is, I don't honestly know if that's the honest answer I have. And maybe that's because I'm being a fan and kind of just looking at it like, oh, look at the suit fighting, blah, blah, blah. Maybe that's because I've had those kind of views earlier on in the series. But the more I've gone on and the more I've talked to people like you and sort of done these podcasts, the more I've actually made me think about it. And now I wonder if I'd seen, if with the mindset I have now, and also, I mean, a lot of things have changed in my life in the past couple of months while Gaim's been airing. It's been interesting, actually, because I remember watching the promos for Gaim like a year ago and thinking how much has changed. So I was thinking that if I'd watched the kind of middle, say, kind of episode 15 to 35, maybe, with the mindset I have now, how much whether I would have stopped earlier, like a lot of people have done. I do wonder.
That's interesting. Maybe that's something to discuss more at the end of the show.
Yeah, like, maybe, yeah.
When we discuss 47... And the whole series.
Yeah, maybe. Yes.
If you wouldn't mind sharing. Did you want to go on your point about...
No. We'll okay. we'll bring that up in our mega rant that's going to come further down the page. Okay. Or further in the show, which I can imagine is going to be... Oh, dear. Anyway.
Okay, yeah, and yeah, if you would like to call us out, listeners, on not covering 41 very well, it's because I didn't feel like making notes saying, oh, wow, look at that bashing of these guys fighting, because at this point in the show, that isn't holding my interest at all. I think I didn't fall asleep during 41, but I've certainly bored, and I forced myself to watch
41. I don't know, like 41. Like if we're gonna like have to object to the race, 41 isn't actually all that bad. Like I didn't think it was all that. Like there was a couple of things in it I liked, and like the whole kind of Kota taking on the mantle of the King of the Overlords, I was like, you know, that's pretty reasonable, and I kind of thought that was okay. But then 42 happened, and I was like, no, you just ruined that, didn't you? Like, you know, I was like, for 41 wasn't terrible, but I was like, I can kind of, you know, and I mean, you know, they did some stuff that was cool, like the kind of finally explaining what Kiwami is, that took far too long. And like, and Reduway, the scene where Reduway gets the golden fruit, and then it kind of all like putrefies in his hands. I was like, I thought that was quite cool and interesting, but then, yeah, anyway. So
in her hands, yeah. I thought that was cool. I almost bring that up to mock the people who have latched onto the show or that aspect of it to say, see, it's not sexist or it doesn't treat women poorly.
See, it's not. Oh, yeah.
It is. It's right. Awful.
Yeah. It's just.
But we'll get into that more.
Yeah.
Sorry. I feel bad. Go ahead if you really want to say what you want to say. Go ahead.
No. Like it just. Also, wait, okay. I will bring up one other thing. I absolutely love the Takatora's actor coming back to do those scenes, kind of as Michi's, like, kind of, I don't know, lighter side, I guess. But those scenes are done so well, and I think they're really good. I do like them as kind of a device, and it's a really interesting kind of tormenting his soul, but I don't think that's, but then, you know, that's a very, very small part of the series.
Yeah,
like,
but
I like that a little bit, you know. Like,
I do agree. I think that is super cool.
And it's kind of...
It's the first bit of, it's one of the first, like, important, focused upon bits of conscience, conscience we get in the show, which is nice. Although it's in the form of this, you know, tormenting ghost.
Yeah. And it's a bit, yeah, exactly, but I like, you know, I mean, also, actually, I might bring up one other thing about. Koji completely forgetting about his family is like a really kind of big issue that they kind of keep avoiding. He seems to completely forget about his sister like entirely in this episode, and then comes back in 42 and he's like, "Oh, you're there," and then just instantly leaves her with Zach, and I'm just like, is this the message you want to send to children? Like, just forget your family because they're not important, and not when you're saving the world. I'm just like,
yeah, it's kind of strange.
It's very bizarre, especially when, like, you know, like, I do not honestly think that Urobuchi would say that to grow up is to forget your family entirely and survive without them, because that's a really terrible message. And, like, if that is what he thinks, then I feel really sorry for him, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Like, if that is honestly the reality that he has known, then I do feel sorry for the guy. But, you know, who knows? That it's often hard to say what the show even thinks at all, if you want to say the show has a message. But anyway, let's move on to 42.
That's some heavy speculation, but
I know,
because there's so little meat to latch on to. The show kind of, to me, invites this wheel spinning, well, what's really going on, because it's so vague in a lot of areas. But let's continue. I was shocked to see Akira in the show again. And then she, you know, quickly disappears. But then, like, Rika and Rat are there also with like a dozen or two dozen civilians.
Yeah.
And that's good, especially because the show started off being about the city and the people, and then it slowly drifted away from that.
Yeah, and Rat and Rika, like, why do they not have their own show? They've shown, like, more initiative than 90% of the characters have. Like, you know, they don't, like, when they get locked in places, they're not like, oh, how terrible is it that we're locked up? Let's philosophically think about why we're locked up. They're like, no, we'll make a rope and we'll get out of here and we'll go and find help because that's what we do. That, you know, and they don't even have to, like, you know, and people have been going on and on about how good their background acting is, and I don't necessarily agree with them on that, but still, like, you know, they should be riders, for heaven's sake, because they have far more initiative than anyone else on the cast is showing at all. I'm like, if that's how background characters are written as opposed to your main characters, then what does that say about, you know, what does that say about heroes in general? And what does that say about role models to aspire to? Because obviously, like, they're, you know, that's not who he's placing in positions of power, or those with initiative. So what does that say about, you know, that trait as something? Because to have initiative is, I would say, a good thing. Because it shows you're thinking for yourself, and you're not requiring, you know, to grow up is to not constantly require the input of parents or, you know, bosses or anything like that. So, you know, become almost, not self-sufficient, but to at least be able to think for yourself in situations where that's necessary. And so to say that that's not even a trait a lot of the main characters have is really, a damning criticism of the show if it is still about growing up, which I highly doubt at the moment.
I have nothing to add. Go ahead, and if you have more to say, go ahead.
And then, like, well, I mean, also I was going to say, like, the kind of, And the Akira thing, like you say, I mean, it's a surprise she's back. But also, again, I mean, I've said this before, but I'll say it again because I feel it more merit saying. She has such potential to be an incredible character, and in the first couple of episodes seemed to be set up that way, and then the ball was just dropped entirely. And it's really sad that that's the case because, you know, she had so much potential. And I hate the fact that I'm banging on at the same thing, but it's true. And this episode, and it just keeps coming up again and again. Every time she appears, you're like, you know, this is, you know, there's so much to this character that you're just not doing anything with because you seem to think that you're the plot with, you know, I don't know, like the other plots that just seem far more important when in reality, I highly doubt that's the case. And it just, the mind boggles for some reason. It's just bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, from early on, the fan reaction, you know, calling her a bitch basically because she told her brother not to earn money by getting into street fights, and she was providing for all his expenses. From that fan reaction, I mean, I don't think Urobuchi was listening to that, but she's just been a character who's been unfortunately maligned, or whose position and role has been maligned by both the fans and apparently the creative team.
I was going to say, it's just...
Because she seemed like she would take the role of a Tachibana or, like, you know, Bondo, that she would be like the center or moral center
But that's the thing, there is no moral center to the show. There's no Tachibana character, there's no mentor, there's no kind of Obi-Wan, there's no kind of, you know, there's no one older who's, you know, who's more experienced. And I think that's it's sadly lacking because Kota and a lot of the others can just do almost anything and there's no one to turn around to them and say, hey, this isn't, you know, what you're doing is wrong or what you're doing is a bad thing. And it was the only time in the series where that's ever happened. Like, as anyone's turned around to Kota and said, you're doing the wrong thing, or, you know, this isn't right. And apart from when, like, Kaito does it a couple of times, but that's not, but that's like, and that's like an equal saying that to him. It's not like someone above him saying, look, sit down, this is how we do things, you're doing it wrong, basically. And and the show is sorely lacking in that for that reason.
I agree. I feel bad, but I mean, this is what we have to say from these episodes.
Like, no, I feel bad too. I don't, like, I'm going to say this is like, we probably are going to keep slating this because, like, it's not good, but I don't want to be doing this. Don't get the impression that, like, you know, we sit there with the episodes kind of thinking, oh, look at that, or we can get that, that's terrible, isn't it? No, we don't do that. That's not how I watch the show. I don't honestly sit there and think, you know, oh, how terrible is that point? Oh, I can really make a rip into pieces for that. You know, it's terrible. Like, that's not how this works. But, like, you know, you do get to the point where you're kind of like, this is really not good. And you know, and you kind of have to say what you kind of have to say what you think and what you're presented with. And if it's not good, then that's, I owe it to myself not to lie and say, oh, it's great, when it's not, you know, that's stupid.
Right. So, yeah. And, yeah, I now watch, and whether I take notes while I'm watching or immediately after, I notice things in the show, things that I take note of mentally, things that impress me, and things that I think are really neat, and red flags. And I've just been getting a lot of red flags have been going up for me, and pretty much nothing else lately, because that's what I'm getting. And, like, for example, I think it's ridiculous that the golden fruit is hurting/killing Mai in 42. And I asked the question in my notes, is it just sexism or is it supposed to be based on merit? If she were a man, would it not hurt her? Because one of the three guys is going to claim the golden fruit and presumably be okay. I mean, Rusho claimed it. Rediway somehow claimed it. So did she merit it somehow in the previous world? And she doesn't even have the golden fruit. Rusho had it. And she just surpassed humanity and became an overlord like Kaito. And actually, 42 is where Kaito says, I wouldn't suffer their brutality, speaking of the overlords, and that's the only reason. So he wouldn't suffer the overlord's brutality, but he's willing to subjugate people under his own brutality, which we've discussed a little bit already.
Yeah.
If you want to skip past that, we can.
No, well, you know. I think I've pretty said everything that I was going to say about Kaito. It's just he's just a confusing mess, put very simply.
Yeah,
it's just. I think your next point is pretty better in that respect.
Okay, consequences are real, or at least they should be. The convenient nullification of a villain's harmful deeds has always bothered me in genre fiction, and I almost agree with Kaito about fighting against Helheim. As in, like, not fighting against it. They should find a way to work with it and coexist. The damage can't be undone, but it can be mitigated, and future potential threats can be channeled to be positive and healthy. I don't know. You can look at this like it's global warming, or you can look at it like it's one culture is living in an area and another culture comes, like, you know, in America with Manifest Destiny, like the white man didn't have to come along and murder the Native Americans.
No.
They could have coexisted. And anyway, I want to steer clear of minefields, but if you look at the history, things were not dealt with properly, and there were opportunities for peaceful coexistence, and the people in charge at the time rejected that.
Mm.
And that's wrong. And I like I said, I think Kaito does kind of have a point. Yeah, work with what has become the new normal. Like, you should be able to embrace change and try to mitigate the negative effects of it. So
I do agree with you, and to some extent Yggdrasil was, this is the weird thing, it's like in that respect Yggdrasil actually was doing the kind of okay thing, because they were building the drivers that meant that people could still survive in Helheim because they wouldn't be tempted by the fruit. So you're kind of like, well, is that a better solution? As you say, like, the show seems to present this really weird binary where it's like you can either just submit or you have to sacrifice yourself. There's no like kind of middle ground where it's like, well, can't we use the power of the golden fruit some other way? It's just like these people have kind of just stopped thinking. And I think that's a really dangerous message to be kind of espousing, that either of those options is palatable by a lot of people. I don't like that that's a message that like people are actually contemplating. It's like, you know, oh, we have to destroy this world, or we have to, you know, I find that to be very unpalatable as an idea. But like, no one thinks of using the golden fruit for anything more than selfish gain other than Kota, which is a bit strange. That no one seems to have a kind of thought beyond that. And then it's just set up as this really kind of simple choice. And so it goes against the entire basis of kind of what happens when you grow up. Because when you're a kid, you start off and you think, oh, okay, you know, there's good and there's evil. And then, you know, I will be good. I will pick the side that makes sense. But then as you go on, you start, you know, learning about things, and you realize actually that, you know, it's not just black and white. Sometimes it is, but other times it's actually a lot more complicated than that. And there's shades of gray in between. But then this seems to imply that being an adult gets you to the point where you just make really black and white decisions just on a bigger scale. And I'm like, that's really not what growing up is like, or what, you know, what adult life is like. I mean, it just goes on to emphasize a point that I'll make later on about how these people are still really children. And it's just a really strange concept that them growing up is kind of them making these huge decisions with really childish reasoning faculties in that sense. I mean, I think Forze does a much better job of dealing with this kind of stuff in only 16 episodes, and this has had 40, you know, 3 now, and Forze did it better. And it's just, you know, I just find that to be kind of really, I think that's a kind of as much of a scathing indictment as I can lay upon this show in terms of what it's done for kind of, you know, for choice making and that kind of thing, and just showing how that works, I guess.
Yes. I pretty much have to say I definitely agree with you about Forze handling that in such a better idea. And it was funny, in our conversations about Forze previously, we had mentioned how how parenting is hard and there's no handbook for it, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, a lot of some really good thinking that I've been looking into recently on parenting has themes that are showing up in Forze, and the more I'm shocked at the more I'm watching of it, the better the show is. And it's just has really good, strong, solid messages, but it isn't preachy, and it's fun and lighthearted, but it can deal with sadness and dark stuff too.
But I think
doing
more
it in like a heartless, soulless way.
Yeah. I think it's more that it deals with like kind of with it deals with real life, and it's not, it never tries to shy away from the fact that real life is either complicated or at the very least like sometimes not great, like, you know, or sometimes downright appalling in some sense, in some respects. But like, this show is just like, oh, everything is grim and dark and there's no hope, and you know, and you're kind of like, that's really not life in reality, you know, like that's not, or at least that's not the kind of world that I live in. Maybe it's the kind of world that you inhabit, and if so, again, I feel sorry for you, but that's, you know, that's not the world as I see it. And so it's a really weird message to be sending out when it's kind of like, you know, is that the world you either want to see or the world that, you know, you actually think people inhabit? It's a bit strange.
Yeah, it is strange, especially because my gut reaction to that is, well, if that's how the person feels, then you should become friends with them and help them.
Exactly. Well, yeah, like, you know? Like Gantaro. Yes, exactly. Right. Like, you know, that's because that's what he does to a lot of people, is pulls them out of hopelessness, as I was saying. You know, kind of, you know, it's this sort of, he extends the hand of friendship, and that brings them to become more of the people they were meant to be, rather than the person they're held back by. But that, you know, that's, you know, that's exactly how, but that's how this show makes me feel. It's like, you know, you don't, like, this is the reason why watching Forza is a joy and watching this is a chore, because you come out of, sometimes, because you come out of this and you're like, wow, that was really hopeless, and you get to the end of it. Whereas in Forza, like, even if the episode ends on a cliffhanger, or, like, it's kind of a sad moment, there's always this kind of feeling of hope underneath it all. Not that Forza will always win, because that's kind of a trope of superheroes, where they're just too powerful, and it's not like that. But you do always get the sense that there's a hope and there's a higher purpose to all this, that this is all kind of leading towards. And maybe this is all just... and perhaps Urobuchi's going on a whole, like, oh, death of innocence and, you know, these things you believe aren't real and stuff. But I'm like, but they are real. You know, that's the point. You know, like, the world does not operate in the way that you seem to think it does, if that is the case. You know, it's just... oh, it's incredible.
The only thing I can think is that he's setting up these false binaries to knock them down and then say, see, that's not how the world is. But that's like a... that's like a politician using a straw man argument, you know?
Yeah.
Some people say we should murder puppies and babies. Well, no, some people don't. People, who says that?
Yes, who?
Like, yeah, but I disagree with that. No, that doesn't work. You can't say that. If nobody actually said that, if you're not quoting somebody, you can't use that to bolster your claims.
Exactly. It's silly. And you're just like, well, what are you doing? Like, I don't know. I'd love to interview General Bucci. I really would. Like, I honestly would love to meet him. Not because I want to, like, just be like, oh, your show is terrible, etc. I wouldn't do that. I just really want to ask him, just seriously, like, are you all right? Are you okay? Like, can we go and have coffee and just talk about this? Because, like, I mean, you know, General Bucci, if you're listening, you know, come to Britain. I want to take you out for a drink. I really do, because I really just want to talk to you.
Yeah, no, I understand how you feel, and my impulses tell me to kind of berate him, but I know the right thing to do would be to say, like, hey, man, is everything okay?
It's just...
Sorry.
Yeah, anyway, sorry, we're getting really off topic. Yeah, sorry, that's my fault, I apologize. But anyway, moving on. Okay, here we go, right?
Yeah, okay,
I can just see my wall of text on the horizon. So here we go.
Okay, so my simple note here is the woman of the beginning stuff is another load of malarkey, let's just say. because
of
it's
nonsense,
once...
that's what he
yes,
said.
Thank you, go. Or thank you very much. Because it's once again, like, placing all this blame on Mai. I mean, basically, this whole thing about, oh, she's the woman of the beginning, she's the one who started this whole, you know, awful fate in motion. You're blaming her, you're blaming Mai, who just wanted to be friends with these guys and wanted to dance and wanted everybody to be happy.
Yeah.
And never actively seduced or gave any of them wrong impressions, never led them on, nothing. I mean, even if she did, it doesn't justify them acting inappropriately. No. You're blaming her being a woman and being attractive to them for this awful fate that has happened, and that is
wrong. I would agree. I didn't see it quite that way. I do agree with you, it's a load of rubbish, but, like, that's maybe for different reasons. Because I just kind of thought that it kind of undermines the whole contest of the Forbidden Fruit thing. It just nullifies the last 20, 25 episodes of plot. Because what was the point of fighting if all they had to do was convince her? Like, there's no point to the contest. It just proves that Roshio was cheating. There's, like, you know, because Scoot seemingly all he was supposed to do is pass the fruit on. And so it just makes the whole last 25 episodes completely pointless. Because, you know, and it's like, well, if all they had to do was convince Mai to give them the fruit, which, I mean, she knew Kota and Kaito and Michi anyway, and it's pretty obvious who she's going to give it to because she knows how they're going to act. So there's no convincing to be done. It seemingly, all of them could have sat around doing nothing for however long the 25 episodes has taken in real time terms, and the result would have been the same, which is just a complete betrayal of, you know, your readers, because you've just put in 25 episodes of nothing, is that ostensibly. And also, like, this whole idea really sits badly with me because this was an opportunity, a golden opportunity, to empower Mai as a character. Because they give her the golden fruit, and as you said before, why can it not power her up as well? what is it about her that makes, you know, that makes it not possible? And so rather than doing that, they turn her into a victim, and they've got this incredibly, they've got this chance to be incredibly progressive, and they throw it in the dirt and jump on it and spit on it and set it on fire. And it's just a huge, enormous pain. And then it gets even worse, because they imply that it's always women who have this role, this kind of, you know, passing the fruit on. So you've got this horrible, horrible message that sort of these women are constantly victims in this cycle. And then Sagara's conversation with Mai goes down the whole route of, well, you know, our whole future emotion can't be changed. And that's a horrible message. And that's a horrible message for kids. You know, if you're doing badly in school and people are like, oh, you'll never amount to anything, blah, blah, and you see a show like this, well, then you're going to believe that it's your destiny to fail. And that's a complete load of nonsense. Like, the whole point of, like, the... Okay, right. Bit of this is going to be where I get really kind of soapboxy. But anyway, the point of these stories for me, like the point of these stories for me when I was a kid, like when I watched Power Rangers and when I watched, like, you know, Beetleborgs and Bull, and all these kind of things, was all about how even though you were a normal person, it didn't matter where you came from, because you could rise up and become something more than yourself if you really, like, either worked hard or believed it. That's the story of Hibiki, basically, is, you know, if you work, if you train, you can become better. And I love that as a message, because it completely flies in the face of all this, you know, oh, you were born with privilege and blah, 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 therefore you're destined to succeed. Because I hate that as a narrative. I think that's a really kind of, it's a really horrible message, especially for kids to hear. Because I think a lot of people often in life are held back by the fact that they've been told in the past you'll never amount to anything, and they think that that's their destiny to do so. And that's not true in, like, 100% of cases. So, you know, So when I was watching these shows, it was all about kind of rising up and becoming something, and, you know, and becoming the kind of person who these heroes were. Because you're not, because you had the powers, but because you can embody what they actually believed in, which were good values. Whereas this is just... this is just like a complete, like, oh no, it was your destiny, therefore we can't do anything about it. And I'm just like, no, that's a horrible message, because this is all about... Because surely this, a lot of this show is all about choices. And this kind of just kind of nullifies any choices the characters have made, because it was always going to happen anyway. So it's just like, well, what was the point? I just, oh, it really got to me. I was like, oh, man, this is just, no, I just don't like this. It, especially not in a show for kids either. I really don't think this is a good thing.
Neon Genesis Evangelion offers up a, like, terrible world to its viewers, but it's meant for teenagers. And, like, it even went too far in a lot of cases.
Mm.
But it was meant for an older audience than Kamen Rider is, and that to me gives a lot of leeway to the show.
Mm.
It gives it a lot of liberties. So I enjoy Neon Genesis Evangelion, but I can't enjoy Gaiman, and it's not something I would share with any children or really advise anybody to watch.
I just think it's, again, it comes back to this thing about it just being kind of hopeless, and it's kind of, you know, and it just, the whole thing, it just goes on and on, and you're like, what, why is this just so hopeless? There's no, you know, there's not even that many characters who are kind of, and then they try and throw in these, like, moments of comedy to try and balance it off, and you're like, this is coming off as really crass, like, at best. You know, and at worst, it's just plain distasteful. And at worst, it's, you know, pretty crass. And you're just kind of like, what are you doing? Like, you know, it's a lot of the time I've come away from these episodes just thinking, you know, if I wouldn't let my kid, like, you know, there is, like, you know, I'll say that I have a lot of leeway in terms of, like, what I think is acceptable for a lot of things. But I wouldn't let my kids watch this. If, you know, I'd probably let, like, if it was, like, maybe Double or something like that, you know, I'd probably be okay with that. Or even, you know, even maybe things like, even some of, like, you know, maybe Cougar and things, maybe not if they were a lot younger, but, you know, kind of, you know, they were, like, you know, 12 or something plus, but not this show, because the morals in it are just horrible. And, you know, I don't want this to be the kind of society I live in. That's the, you know, that's the basically what it comes down to. These aren't the values I want people to embody, and therefore, you know, why would you even watch it in that respect?
Right. No, I totally understand that. Okay, so time for me to get into a wall of text.
so many walls of text.
Yeah. Okay, so Death and Rebirth is such a poor binary to set up. The superior third way is self-integration, even like slaying the self, which you can find in, I don't know, probably humanism even nowadays, modern humanism to some extent, in a lot of ancient religions, and including Christianity and Judaism. To be born again is a holistic process. It's not nihilistic, which is what the show seems to be espousing. Sagara is apparently Helheim, which is the spirit of growth and evolution, and that's really disgusting.
That's a load of just baloney, yeah. to put it nicely. I was watching it, and then it's like, is the wrong word, but like, Mitchy kind of goes, but why are you doing this? And he's like, don't ask me why. And I'm just like, no, you explain, you sit down and explain yourself. You know, why do you feel this is even, like, it's not even like he comes, turns around and he's like, oh, I'm just a primeval force and this is kind of the thing that happens. No, it's just, oh, yeah, it's completely, yeah. You're right, everything you say next is, yeah.
Especially because the personification of him in this, like, hateful, disdainful, like, this completely unsympathetic, unfeeling thing is just awful. Anyway,
yeah.
Let me continue, because I'll just get more nutty. I want to know from you, specifically, is this more of One Trick or a Butchie? Because it seems...
Yep.
Well, because some superior alien entity, basically, because he says he goes from planet to planet or world to world, toys with lesser beings for fun, and that's all kind of nasty.
It's in Puella Magi, spoilers if you haven't seen it, it's not quite for fun. It's more about feeding, I think. I can't remember because I haven't seen it for a long time, but I'm pretty sure that the reason QB says they're doing what they're doing is basically for energy for his masters of some form or other. So it's not necessarily like for fun, but it's still kind of a very similar kind of idea.
Okay. Wow.
So, yeah.
Write something else. Sorry.
I was really hopeful that this wouldn't be, like, I was really hopeful he was going to turn around and Sagara was going to be something different, but no, it was kind of what I thought. Like, when he says, like, oh, I am Helheim, I was kind of like, oh, okay. Yeah, well done, Urobuchi, well done. That's the same show, and they're just slightly different guys. It's like someone took him to
They're wearing different outfits, right?
Well... When a QB, well, the thing, I don't know, QB's quite funny, though, because QB is a cat that looks cute and doesn't have any real facial expression, so he communicates via telepathy, which is kind of a nice concept that something so cute is so evil. I kind of like, that's a kind of interesting way to play it. But this was just distasteful in every important respect. And as you say, he's completely unsympathetic. He's like a human with no humanity, and it's just like, that's really disturbing for a villain to have.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so I keep bringing up nihilism because I think the show's full of it, unfortunately. So Kaito,
do you want to define nihilism for those of our viewers?
Sure.
Don't know.
It's basically a destructive outlook on life. Like, would you say that's a proper pronunciation?
I looked it up on Wikipedia earlier today, so because I didn't necessarily know. So yeah, the negation of one or more reputedly meaningful aspects of life. So basically, most commonly it's put forward that our life is without objective meaning, purpose, or intrinsic value. That's essentially the doctrine of nihilism.
Okay.
Or you can exist, the morality doesn't exist, or you kind of thing, so yeah.
Okay, well, I don't think that's good for children
to
be taught.
No,
that should
not
be inculcated in the youth of any population.
No,
anyway.
not at all.
So Kaito's suicidal nihilistic attitude is well written, if very off-putting, and the fact that Minato has chosen to stick by him for reasons to the very end, and she won't unchoose that, is further befuddling and off-putting. Or do you like it?
No. Like is a very strong word. I think the relationship between Minato and Kaito has been very ambiguous throughout most of the series, and there were several moments they could have made something more of it and haven't, and I think now it's too late and they're just kind of going with, well, we'll pretend we've done those things that would have built up the relationship between them. And her kind of, but then it's kind of not so great because her devotion has been split between like him and Ryoma, and so it seems she just latches onto kind of men with power or something, or like, you know, men with drive, maybe, I don't know. It just seems a very... It's a very, very destructive way of being for her, I would say.
Yeah.
Like, that's how it comes across to me, and so her decision to stay with him is more a kind of... I don't know, it just seems very strange, and he doesn't seem to have really done anything to her to deserve that, at least not that we've seen. Which
right.
is why I think it's kind of comes out of left field in some respect.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Okay, and then here's another thing.
Here we go.
Yeah. Why is it that physically altering the body and transforming takes away someone's humanity? Rushuo and the other overlords made choices. Surely his regret is a sign of his intact humanity or lymphity or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So this false danger, well, which turns out to be real, unfortunately. This,
yes.
What I thought at the time was a false danger to Mai. It was uncalled for and makes an excuse for war, for some Hakusei. You know, Professor Ryoma use Michi and violate the girl's body by tearing the golden fruit from it. Once again, this is all kinds of gross.
Yep, I completely agree with absolutely everything you just said, and I'm going to now continue with my rant. As I was saying earlier, this is the point at which it wasn't necessarily this point in the episode. There was one line in episode 43 that pushed me over the edge, which I'll talk about when we get there. But this point, this whole kind of scene or this setup was what made me lose all hope, because there are so many things wrong with this scene. For a start off, there's pregnancy overtones, rape overtones, there's physical violation of someone's body actually happening, not just implied. You know, he does it, he kills her in the next episode, and Ryoma has no remorse whatsoever for anything that he does. It's complete, which for a start doesn't work for his character. For a second, is morally reprehensible in every important respect. It is a complete an utter mess. And, like, I'm not saying that we shouldn't talk about these things and they should never be addressed in shows, because that's, you know, that would be to say it doesn't happen, and that, you know, negates the experience of many people, and these things have to be considered and talked about, but in the correct forum for doing so, not in a children's show like this. I'm sorry, but no. And, like, some would argue that the show kind of nullifies it because Ryoma is a bad person, and, like, and bad people, and, you know, and that's what bad people do, and he gets killed in the next episode. But I don't think that's no excuse for putting this stuff on screen, where it's gratuitous and almost completely unnecessary for the story. So there's no dramatic purpose at all, and frankly, it made me want to stop watching the episode completely. I would have just given up at this point, but for the fact that, I am continuing to watch it because I said it would. And finally, to go on with the whole thing, like, the ages on these characters is a bit unclear, because it's never really, like, they don't actually go, oh, you're 18, or you're, you know, whatever. But, like, I'm going to kind of take a guess that Kota's around 19, and Mai's kind of a similar age. Sorry, Kota's, like, 17 or 18, and Mai's a similar age, and Kaito's a little bit older, so, like, 19, 20. Because of what we've seen them doing in the show. If that's the case, Mai is a child. Now, that's just wrong. I'm sorry, but that, I'm not happy with that in the slightest. And that's all I have to say on the topic.
I totally agree. I think your ages are a little off, but I would say that she and Michi are the youngest, and around 16 and 17.
Well, okay, fine. More to my point.
But
then.
Still, like, yeah, it makes even. I mean, it's still terrible, especially because in the next episode, Ryoma tries to strangle Mitsuzane.
Yeah, and like, and this is the thing, like,
with his bare hands, unhenshined.
Especially
an adult trying to murder a child. Sorry, I'm stepping all over you, but it's just so unbelievable.
And that scene where Michi is, like, crying on the floor with blood coming out of his mouth, and Baron comes in and finds him. And I was like, it just really drove home into my head the point, these are children. They're not, you know, these are not adults. It's not like with, you know, Hongo when he was, you know, he was like, what, 30 and odd or something like that? You know, he was older.
He could have been like 25, but still,
yeah,
he'd
but
been
still,
through things.
He's an adult. These are children. They're not, this is not, like, and people can go on and say, oh, it's a show about people that, you know, get into coloured armour and hit each other. And I'm like, yeah, okay, oh, fine. That's not a defence. Like, that's no, you can't just say, oh, this happens and it's okay. It's not okay at all. It just isn't. Like, you know, you just, like, I didn't even think about the whole children aspect until I saw that shot of Mitsuzane lying on the floor, and I was like, he is, and, like, it's probably because of his height. Like, I'm not saying that it's not a short people thing. I'm just saying it really drove home in my head, like, these are still kids, and this is really, and, like, and kids are watching this, and this is really important that kids don't take these kind of attitudes and views and kind of make them into something real. And it was physically sickening in so many respects. It was just, it was awful. Like,
yeah, no, I totally agree. Like, let's see. Yeah. By the end of episode 43, I, I felt ill. Like, I was sick to my stomach, and I'm pretty sure it kept me up for, like, an extra hour. So yeah.
I tell you what it was. Like, the line that really got to me was when, it's when Michi's gone and Ryoma is walking next to Mai when she's on the table. And that, also, actually, I'll make this one point before I make that point. The fact that they dress Mai in white and do this whole thing and turn her into this, like, virginal prize for all the men, I was like, no, I'm sorry, I'm not having this at all. That is a terrible portrayal of women in general and Mai in specific. It's just not something that happens. But anyway, when Ryoma walks past her and he's like, maybe the princess needs a kiss from the prince or something like that, and I was like, you sick man. Like, it's just, and not to be unfair to his actor, but it's horrible because his character isn't like that, or from what we've seen. Like, he's not, you know, it just seems to completely betray his character that that's what he would do. And you can go on about, oh, he's driven by only by data, he doesn't care about real people. Okay, but I know people that are like that, and they're not unfeeling psychopaths, which is what he seems to have turned into. Like, there's like a distinction between those two kinds of people, and they just seem to have completely forgotten that. And it just makes, and as you say, it just makes me sick that that's what they put in a show that's being shown to children at 7:30 in the morning on TV, on mainstream TV, and is watched by a lot of people, or seemingly so anyway.
Right. Yeah, I don't know the last, what the last ratings report was, but I thought Gaim was doing fairly well. But still, I mean, the audience, it is reaching.
But it's being watched by.
To see that.
And like I said when I was ranting, it's not about not talking about these things ever, because that's not the correct way to deal with them. But it's about dealing with them in an age-appropriate forum for dealing with them, and this is not the place to do that. And like, you can go on and on about how like making like Kamen Rider is like an adult show. That's true to a degree, but not in this way. And it does. It's not the place to bring up these kind of things. And I'm not
right.
And
it should be a family show.
Yes, quite.
Not an adult show, because its roots are in children's, you know, television. And I mean, the time slot that it aired in the 70s originally is one thing to consider, because it was more for families. But then parents are there to help their children deal with the scary things that they see and explain stuff to them.
And it's like, you know, Doctor Who comes under this kind of banner for me. Like, it's a family show and scary things happen, and it does sometimes bring up things that are, like, sometimes difficult to discuss, like, you know, war and what happens when people get left behind and families breaking apart and that kind of thing. And those things are really, and the same with Gundam Zero, like the original Gundam series, like that takes a whole like kind of aspect about war and what happens to people when, you know, when wars happen and how things get torn apart. But it never goes down this route of like, you know, to one, like, just making one person's life hell. And that's the thing, like, Mai is now dead and seemingly like a disembodied ghost. And like, and as I said, and Ryoma just shows no remorse. Like, that's the thing in villains that, like, really gets me more than anything else. Like, I was watching the Stieg Larsson Girl with the Dragon Tattoo film, and the thing that got me most about the villain was that he just had no remorse whatsoever and had enjoyed what he'd done to his victims, and it's utterly disgusting. But, like, that was what scared me the most about the whole thing. Not, like, any of the rape, like, there are rape scenes in it that are kind of really, really bad, but, like, they were shocking, but not, like, kind of scaring me in myself, and that was kind of the worst part of it. So it was just, yeah, this is not the and that's in, like, an 18 rated film, so, you know, that kind of gives you an idea of kind of the level I'm talking about. But this is not the kind of thing that I would want a lot of other people to watch, if I'm honest. Like, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, man, I almost swore. Ryoma gets Mitsuzane out of the hospital so that he can do what he does. I have a hard time even saying it, by convincing him that the only way to save his princess, basically, is to go do battle with Kota, who would be willing to sacrifice her to save everybody else in the world. Which, by the way, the needs of the many do actually outweigh the needs of the few. I'm not saying we should all, you know, murder one person a year to save everybody. I'm not saying anything like that, but if one person's death means that, like, everybody can be saved, I don't think that's a bad thing. But let me, that's a little tangent, let me get into my main point.
Yeah.
You know, Michizane takes the hell fruit or whatever. I don't even care. Sorry, Acer.
The Yomiguri Lockseed, I think is what it's called in the Japanese name for it anyway.
Right, and it's,
it is the Hell Lockseed, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, whatever it is. You know, that's gonna kill him, but gives him all this power. He takes that and goes to fight Kota to provide Ryuma time. But, you know, I have to ask, does Michi really love her? I'm gonna say no, because he needs her as an object to anchor himself, which he basically said. Michi's so-called noble self-sacrifice is a self-delusion, I think. It is easier to die for someone than to constantly work to live for them, and he's so distraught at this time that I think he's seeking to die. So he doesn't have to face her, almost.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I kind of read it more that, like, he's in love with the idea of Mai. He's not... Like, he wants to preserve his memory of her in the state she was. And he's just using... Her physicality to him is nothing. And it's just... Her physicality is a portal to that memory that he has. Rather than it being about her as a person. Which, you know, is... And yeah, as you say, he kind of... He then... And like, the more he's berated throughout the episode, the more he realises kind of what a wretch he has become. And how, therefore, she's never going to accept him, so the memory is therefore all he has. And thus he'll fight, and thus his death is fairly irrelevant because he has what he wants. Or has, not what he wants, but all he's ever going to be able to have because of what's happened. So, yeah, I don't think he does. I wouldn't say he does love her. I think he loves the idea of her and would fight for that instead.
That's an interesting different point of view on it. I think that's a... It doesn't make it better, but it's...
No, I agree.
It's interesting, more interesting way to think about it than I think what I was saying.
Because, I see it in... you see it in quite a bit of... It comes up a lot in obsession narratives, where the person's actual physical presence is not what the person is wanting. They just want... It comes up in The Simpsons like in a really weird way where like Bart and Lisa are fighting over something and Bart like takes it off, like Lisa's playing with it and like Bart takes it off her and Homer's like, I'll give that back, and Lisa's like, oh well, he doesn't want it because he wants it. He wants it because I've got it. Then she gives it to him, Bart just kind of throws it away and he's like, whatever. And that's how I see it. It's like, right. You know, that's a really stupid example, but that kind of gets, that's the point I'm trying to make. He's like, if Mai went to him and was like, oh, hey, Mitch, you know, do you want to hang out or whatever? He'd just kind of blow her off and be like, no, I don't care. Because all he wants is he either wants her on his terms or just the idea of her is enough. And that's what he's in love with. So if they were ever to actually have any kind of relationship, it would be amazingly dysfunctional because all he would want is her to adhere to this idealized notion he has in his head, which is unfulfillable and never going to happen. And then it would just spiral into chaos. And so it's a really, so even from the start, it's kind of doomed to failure in some respects. So yeah, it's a very, very destructive relationship, which is kind of outlined by Michi and the way he acts, I guess. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Which is sad, but true.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, with all that said, all the negative things I could say about him, I am wavering between feeling pity and nothing for Michizane, because all this tragedy and trauma doesn't feel earned to me. Mm. He feels more like a pathetic fool for whom I have some sadness, but I won't mourn his loss terribly much, because he could have changed course at any time. All this binary...
He made a lot of conscious choices to be as he is. It's not like he just kind of fell into it.
Yeah, that's totally true. And you know, Urobuchi presents this binary tokenism that it's just, you know, he wants there to be a false choice because he wants there to be a false choice. Or he makes it so because that's what he wants. And it doesn't have anything to do really with what the characters are doing. And I don't know what the message is here, but I once again feel like shouting about how dangerous this show is, which... you mentioned that, you know, there's people bashing each other in colorful armor and like, oh, that can be attractive to kids. Mm. And, I had written a little thing saying that I think it's poisonous or, it's like the fruit of a poisonous tree. Like it's the colors and the fun, don't reflect the dangerous, dark, poisonous things that this show holds inside of it. So it's almost like a poisoned fruit or whatever.
Yes. The irony.
and it really is, and it's just, it's awful.
No, it is. It is. I completely agree. I think you're right. This is not what the show should, this is not what shows like this should be about. I mean, I feel kind of, in some senses, I know that some people are going to think like, oh, why are you spending so much time bashing this show? It's a stupid kid show, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's not, this isn't how people really think. And I'm like, okay, but I don't think you should hold these shows to any less of a high standard just because they're kid shows. Like, you know, everyone needs good media to grow up with, and everyone needs, you know, good moral messages to have, whether they get them from literature or music or, you know, anything like that. And so I don't see why we should not hold this show up to as high a standard as I would almost any other show. I mean, I remember some of the kids' shows I grew up with, things like The Demon Headmaster and great, amazing shows written by people who really cared about the messages they were giving out. And it just seems that this is the complete opposite, or it's just, I don't know, it just seems like it's a complete... It's just a complete mess. Like, that's, I keep keeping parts of it, but that's what I feel. It's just, it is a mess.
Okay, so let's go ahead and move on to 43. I think we've touched on it all throughout, but let's just, yeah, you know.
There's one more thing I'm going to bring up about Ryoma and Mai and the situation, which I don't think anyone had any control over, but I feel needs mentioning because of how it made me feel. But go on and make your points first, and then I'll talk about it.
Okay, very good. Gaim 43, Baron's Ultimate Transformation. I like the fact that Ultimate was used... Oh, no, I don't, actually. I was going to say Ultimate should mean Final, and I thought, like, oh, yeah, this is Final Transformation because he's going to die.
Yeah.
And no, because he transforms... He's transformed
again
in the previous...
Back again.
Never mind. Yeah. Okay. It's the fake meaning of Ultimate. Great.
Yes.
Anyway. My notes. This show is really gross.
Yep.
There is... there is some beauty in it, but it's surrounded by such awful stuff that it really is repulsive. I felt sick to my stomach after finishing this one.
Yeah, like, yeah, I can agree, and I think, and I know that people in, like, one of the other reasons this made me so sick to read was because, like, I don't know how many of you, like, I know that you follow this because you sent me the link to it on Twitter, but like, in the news, like, in the recent past, there's been this big case in Rotherham, which is not far away from where I live, in the UK, about kind of huge, massive child exploitation and child sexual abuse and grooming and that kind of thing. And I know that no one in Japan probably cares, but, like, when this aired, like, the same week all these allegations came out, and, like, it just seemed incredibly, like, timely and in really terrible taste. Like, I know it's a really, really weird criticism to make because they can't control what happens in the news on the other side of the world, but, like, it just kind of really brought the whole thing home to me in a way that I didn't expect. And so I don't know really where I'm going at this point, but I just felt it was worth mentioning that kind of the context, like, if people think I'm being very harsh on the show for doing these kind of things, that's the context I'm coming from, where, like, this has just kind of all blown up in the last week, and it's been a really kind of, I think for a lot of people it's been incredibly sobering, especially when they've revealed that, like, this kind of abuse of this nature was going on for, like, years and years. And so when a show like this comes along and kind of seems to almost, when it presents stuff like what happens to Mai, almost with no commentary on whether it's bad or not, or even, you know, reprehensible, it kind of, you know, really gets me somewhere that it shouldn't. Because it's just, you know, because it just seems to kind of almost be allowing this behavior to perpetuate, or even, you know, perhaps even not condoning it, because the show doesn't go out to say it's good, but, like, it just seems to kind of, it seems to have almost no commentary, which is, I would say, even worse, because they had an opportunity to make a really strong message about how this is a bad thing, and just don't, or seem to not to.
Which is...
even worse in some respects.
yeah, I can see that. Okay, so, my final point for this episode, Mayan Kota's self-sacrifices were admirable, but the lie of the unlimited power Mai has, which to me, like, drives home her objectification that's been, like, perpetrated on her by Urobuchi, you know, the mutilation and murder are unforgivable elements of a children's television show, as we've said before. I have determined that Urobuchi has written himself into the show by way of Sagara, and he likes to play with his characters and viewers, and he likes to do it in a way that concerns me. So that's it on him. I don't want to pass judgment, but that's really what it seems like to me. But this is not Kamen Rider, and this is damaging. Mm. And that's how I feel.
I worry about this in the same way that I worry about an anime that aired in the last season called No Game No Life, which, have you seen or heard of any? Or heard of it? Because it did really, really well on Crunchyroll ratings.
I heard of it, but I never watched it.
Yeah, well, it was like, it basically got to the point of kind of almost glorifying like neat culture, which is like, you know, not in education, employment or training, or like being a shut-in and a Hikinomori, and it made them the hero of this story and kind of glorified it. And I went on Crunchyroll and there was all these like 5-star reviews of it, and everyone was like, oh, this is amazing, I love it. And then like there were hardly any like, and I was kind of like, no, this is terrible, you shouldn't be glorifying a lifestyle that means you withdraw from society entirely, because that's like, you know, completely terrible and not what being a functioning member of society is about. And so I fear that if the ratings for this are really strong, people are just gonna be like, oh, well, they want more of this kind of really dark and gritty thing. And it just, and that, and as you say, that's not what Kamen Rider is about. It can be dark, that's not the problem, but this is just taking it to a place where it shouldn't ever have gone to in the first place, and it's deeply concerning in that respect. On the point of the sacrifices that you talk about, I think, yeah, they were quite admirable. Coders, I think, probably is a bit misguided, but in some sense, I think it's good to show that he still had faith in his friend, even if I think that was perhaps misplaced, considering how much Michi has done. But like, you know, but then I think this is another mishandling of the dichotomy between forgiveness and trust, which the show's done really badly ever since kind of the death of Sid. And I've talked enough at length about why I think, you know, how there is a difference between those two things, and also how the show has really not brought that up. And I think actually that's one of the, again, I think that's one of the key tenets of growing up, is appreciating that difference between the two things, because you have to appreciate that you're going to come into conflict with people at some point in your life. That's almost inevitable. And, you know, working out strategies for resolving conflict and moving forward in your relationship with somebody after something has happened is a key part of becoming an adult, and something, you know, that admittedly, you know, I don't think everyone, and I think, well, I know, I'd probably say that I don't think a lot of people handle very well, because that's, you know, the cause of a lot of conflict in the world, is that those kind of things don't happen. And I just think that, and I think if the show had been about that, and dealing with that better, that would have been a much more positive message overall. And on a final point, if this is the way that the show is going to end, and if it gets any worse than this, I just can't wait for Drive to start, because heaven knows I need something different to this. That's all I can say on the subject.
I think that's pretty much all we have to say on these episodes, and I guess we'll see what happens with the next four, because it should be 44 through 47 will be the last four shows of the series, and then thank God Drive will be starting October 5th, I think.
Oh, that's first week, The Saturday of my first week back at uni, excellent, right, good. I'll have all the time in the world, then, excellent.
Oh, yeah. All right, so that's pretty much where we're going to end, except for we have a piece of mail from a Twitter follower, if not listener. I'm not 100% sure if this fellow listens. So, Jonathan, why don't you go ahead and read that?
So this was mail from Buck with John on Twitter. He says, here are my thoughts on dark themes or topics in kids' shows in a little more coherent manner. I think that one of the best things that entertainment for children can do is to teach practical lessons and help kids grow and expand their knowledge. As a kid, television was my main source of entertainment. I watched stuff like Spider-Man, Pokemon, Power Rangers, Digimon, excellent shows, by the way, watch them all if you never have, and so on. What do these things have in common? All of them are fun shows with incredibly dark moments. Pokemon had an episode where a trainer left the Pokemon out to die without showing any remorse. He even laughed, if I remember correctly. Power Rangers has its fair share of death and destruction. Spider-Man's entire story is wrapped around the idea that the title of hero allowed his uncle to die. And Digimon had an entire season so dark they changed the theme song to a more metal version of the original. Characters died, children were put through psychological torture, and the ending was so sad I almost cried as a kid. It was pretty heavy. There were some legitimate dark things to all these franchises, but these dark things helped me grow as a person. And as I watch Gaim, I see the same things. Dark, scary aspects like children dying, children put through psychological torture, and, well, you get it. By showing children the bad aspects of the world in a controlled environment, and by showing them that these dark things can be overcome, we can help children grow into more responsible adults sooner. Also, anything written well can spark creativity in ways that some children never thought of. I don't think I'd be half the person I am today if any of the things I love pulled their punches. Darkness, when utilised correctly, is another tool that can be used to help anyone, like children, learn any lesson. P.S. There is a limit. It's one thing to show a character die, another to show a person's organs spill out after being cut open. Dark doesn't mean necessarily gory or crude. The tools or items must be used in the proper manner in order to be appreciated. Hope this clarifies some things. Thanks for the chance to express my opinion in a coherent manner. Have a nice day. From John. Well, thank you very much, John. I do agree with you in a lot of what you said, and like, I think the points you make are very good. I think it's the point about a controlled environment, and I think it's a point about those things being, I think the way you lay it out is very, very good. And I think the problem that Gaim has is that the controlled environment aspect isn't there. That it's presenting these dark things in a hopeless world, whereas in like Pokemon and Spider-Man and Digimon especially, a lot of them come down, they are dark, but they come down on the side of hope a lot of the time. And they don't say that like darkness is the only option. There's always a kind of hopeful aspect to them. And it's always to show the kind of light balancing the darkness, whereas in Gaim it just needs to be kind of all darkness all the time, which is a really kind of, again, a terrible kind of message to bring home, I guess.
I'm not sure that I agree with John's point or presentation of the facts that the shows that he mentioned didn't pull their punches. Because, well, maybe they didn't pull their punches, but maybe Urobuchi and Gaim are just, like, kicking us in the teeth.
or the groin.
Yeah, right? Wherever. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because I would argue that those shows kind of did pull their punches, because I think I pretty much watched all of those shows that he mentioned, and, like, Tamers is my favorite season.
Mm.
And it has, like you said, it has hope, just like all the other ones. There's a silver lining to all the darkness in them. And I don't know about, I was even thinking about that, the whole D-Reaper situation at the end of Tamers. I don't think it goes too far, especially because the kids have their parents that they end up, being able to meet with and kind of, talk to about the situation that's going on. And they have a community of people who are like working, are hopefully not, like, I hope they are. They are with hope in their hearts.
Yeah.
Working to fight against the D-Reaper and its mindless destruction, which kind of Helheim has. And nobody says, I'm just going to destroy the world like Kaito does. Or, I mean, not even that. It just,
all the bad things that happen,
I feel like they're fairly well balanced out. But
yeah. I think like, kind of, I liken this to Harry Potter a lot and kind of how I read that, because that's my kind of, like, in terms of darkness, like, that starts off in a place that's kind of very, very hopeful and like, oh, it's a nice novel about boarding school and kind of, you know, with a few things thrown in. And by the end, it's like, wow, that escalated quickly. You know, kind of, that's how you feel about it. But, like, every time they bring up like, you know, dark things happen, like people die or whatever, it's always dealt with or considered, and you have no doubt in your mind that your heroes are your heroes and they abhor the situation that they are placed into when it's dark. Like, with it, it's kind of like if, spoilers for book 6 if you haven't read it, Dumbledore dies, right? But like, when that happens, his funeral scene is so well handled, and like, I can't even, like, I was re-listening to it recently, like, on a ferry, like, I was on a boat going somewhere, and I was listening to it, and I was nearly crying. It was so well handled. Like, it's just, there's so much kind of hope inside it, and, like, even though he's died, it's, like, kind of, it's the passing on of the mantle and all these kind of things. But Gaim just doesn't have that, because as you say, there's no real moral compass in this show. There's no mentor character. There's no one to turn around and go, hey, have you thought about, you know, have you seen where you've got to, kind of thing? And it's a role that could so easily have been there, because there are so many times when characters are in scenes either on their own or just with another character, and it would have been so easy to just insert this kind of mentor character, or a few characters to be mentors even. I mean, I would have found it really interesting if they'd set up this kind of trio between Michi, Baron, and Michi, Kaito and Kota, and kind of gave them all kind of individual mentor characters that pushed them in three different directions and kind of played them off against each other to kind of say, you know, which is maybe the best of these three options you could take. And that would have been really interesting, but that didn't happen. And I think for the lack of those mentors, because that's the thing, like, especially in Digimon and things like that, and Spider-Man, and even Pokemon to a degree, you always have these kind of mentor characters who kind of sit down and go, hey, look, you know, This isn't the way you do things. You know, you might think that, but this isn't the way you do things. And I think that's what's really important about a lot of these shows is that they have that kind of moral compass or moral center to them. And Gaim is just sorely lacking in that department. And so things are just allowed to happen, and characters go almost unquestioned in their views until something blows up in their face. And that, but without the mentor character, they kind of don't have anyone to make them sit down and say, and so what did we learn from that situation? They just kind of go along and deal with the consequences rather than thinking, how can I change myself so this doesn't happen again in the future? Which I think is a great way to be in real life, and a really good positive kind of attitude to take to a lot of things, because bad things will happen, but it's about how you deal with them. And I think to not show that is really doing kids a disservice in many respects.
I totally agree with that.
I'm glad.
I would like to say more, but I think we've reached a good length here, and I think this was a good... unfortunately, we were a little redundant, but or people may feel we were a little redundant, but I think
if you disagree and you thought these episodes were great, then please talk to any of us. Like, I don't mind if you think we're completely talking nonsense and this is a load of rubbish and you think we're completely wrong. Like, I don't care. I just really want to know. Like, I really want somebody to kind of restore my faith in the show in some respect. But, like, it's just... But, like, the more I watch it, the more I just think, this is not good in any respect. Like, I like the toys, I like the designs, and that's about it. Like, you know, even that is somewhat tainted by my feelings about the show as a whole. And it's really disappointing because... I don't think I've ever yet met a Rider show where I've actually thought this is beyond the pale, this is beyond redemption. Even Fize has things in it that I like, even though the story's a bit of a mess. But I've come to this show and I'm like, this actually might be the one show where I say this is beyond redemption. Like, and
if I was not doing this show, I would not finish.
I think I would, but that's probably because I have this kind of weird I've started it, so I'll finish mentality. So, you know, I wouldn't enjoy it. So, you know, but I would probably force myself because, you know, I only have so many, I've only got 4 episodes to go to the end of the season, but that's, you know, and I'm not saying that's healthy or anyone should do that, but that's just the way I'm wired. So I can't, you know, I can't get away from that.
Right. But, not yet anyway. We'll see.
You will break me eventually. But
not break you, help you.
So you're my mentor character. You'll sit me down and be like, Jonathan, look, we got to talk about some stuff, man. Like,
well, maybe I'll, maybe I'll marathon a series with you and then I can say, all right, we did that. We're good. Let's move on from that. You know?
Well, I would gladly do that with Digimon with you. I would gladly watch all of Digimon because we would have an amazing time. And we could eat ice cream and it would be great. Like...
homemade ice cream. I've been making homemade ice cream.
Oh, have you?
And it's wonderful.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. What flavors?
Coffee.
Oh, that's good. That is good.
Chocolate, coffee, but the coffee, we used too much water we didn't make the coffee strong enough. I was actually saying to my wife, maybe we should get espresso. And use that as the coffee.
Because
it's too watery because we brewed like a decent amount of cups of coffee and put it in there and it just threw it off.
But yeah, I can understand.
Butter pecan. Fantastic.
Oh, yeah. That sounds good.
It's delicious. Look into making your own ice cream at home. It's really wonderful.
This is what the show has driven us to. We're talking about cooking. I mean, I love cooking. I mean, don't get me wrong, cooking's amazing, but like... You know, and I'm sure Claire would attest to that if she was here too. But
but she refuses to be here because the show is, I believe she would say it's crap.
I can't really disagree with that. Neither can I. No, like,
and I would like to laud her for seeing that,
20 episodes
before
ago.
We did.
No, and I quite agree, and I probably, but yeah, I have a. But yes, I would. Anyway, sorry, we're getting off the point. I quite agree. This is we probably should have seen this coming a long way off, but we didn't, and we have to deal with that now because we are products of, you know, our experiences. But yeah, as you say, if I can imagine that there would have been a part of me that probably would have given up with this show if I wasn't doing it, could have given up with Gaim if I wasn't doing it for this show. However, I think this show has actually made me appreciate more of the Rider I do watch in a way that I never appreciated before. So I have this show to thank for that in that respect.
Well, that's good. See, you're making the best out of the situation and just said, instead of just like destroying your computer that has all your Kamen Rider on it.
I will say this, even though we're kind of running out of time, but I will say this. I am a firm believer that one thing will not, like, one thing like this, one bad experience, will not spoil the entire franchise for me. I refuse to let Urobuchi win in that respect, if that was his intention, which I highly doubt it was, because he's a fan of Kamen Rider. Although, if we have fans like this, who needs enemies, but, you know, But, you know, like, I refused, like, because Forze is amazing, and I refuse to let Gaim ruin my enjoyment of a show that I really like. So, you know, of a franchise in general that I really like. So I will not let this destroy Kamen Rider for me, but it is not good, and I agree with you on that score.
Like I said, this is not Kamen Rider.
No, and exactly. On that note... And on that note, yes. And on that bombshell, we leave it. We'd like to thank our special guest.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. And please, if you strongly disagree, send emails, send plenty of tweets, whatever you got to do. Voicemails are fine, too. Well, yeah. We don't have a voicemail number, but you can record an MP3 of yourself.
Yeah, record an MP3 and send it to us. We will gladly play it and listen to you. And if you want to come on the show, like, seriously, I'm probably think we're being very serious, whatever, come on and chat. I really want to know, like, what other people think of the show, because I sometimes wonder if we're just shouting into a vacuum. But, like, you know, but then I shout into a vacuum all day. It doesn't do me much good.
Right. And the only thing that we ask is that if you are to come on and if we engage in discourse over this show,
yeah,
that we operate with common courtesy, where
oh, yeah,
we are, like, respectful of each other's opinions, even though we may disagree, and we seek to understand what the other person is saying, even if it may be very difficult, and
exactly,
we try to have a good time doing it.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah. I mean, like, I disagree with Amit on loads of things, but, you know, we're still friends, or I hope so, anyway. But, like...
Yeah, I think so.
Like, well, oh, thanks.
But, like, last time I checked.
I've destroyed that friendship in 5 seconds, but well done. But, you know, no, like, but, you know, we probably do disagree about a lot of things, but, like, that doesn't mean that we're any worse of people for it, or that we don't get on over our views on this show. So, yeah, as he says, common courtesy would be great, but if you want to come on and talk about it, and you want to engage, that would be awesome, so please do that.
Yes, and with that, we bid you adieu. If you experience any complications, would like to make a testimonial, or have any questions, send your correspondence to uncommoncastrx@gmail.com or contact us via Twitter @NeedsMoreAleph, @GomezQ, @IllustratorClaire, @NejiRayon, @ProfessorWhat, @SonYourFace, @Where'sMyHenchman. On behalf of everyone, this is Amit saying we hope you have enjoyed this dose of the cure for the Kamen Rider show. I run the show's Twitter feed @UncommonRx, as well as the Toll Network feed @TrialOfHeroes, where you can keep up to date on all our shows, including Moonspeak, a bi-monthly Sailor Moon Crystal show discussing the ongoing series. Subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, your favorite RSS reader, or visit trialofheroes.wordpress.com to get it all.